Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
I'm opening. We have an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Hello, everybody.
Yes. We're back,
Pitches! We are back, Pitches! Oh my gosh, I am so excited. Welcome to Popcorn Talk. Today we are dissecting Pitch Perfect 2, the highly anticipated Pitch Perfect sequel. I'm so excited. I'm your host, Marissa Serafini. Joining me, I have
Sarah Stratton.
Phil Svitek.
Yes!
Oh, is that you singing your name?
Yes.
Welcome. Sing your name as you initiate.
Yes. Everyone just sings their names. We're going to be singing by the end of this dissection. Yes, I'm so excited to talk about this film. Overall, really quickly, what were your thoughts? Were you fans of the first one, and what were your thoughts of going into the second one?
I was totally a fan of this first one. I don't remember if I saw it in theaters or not, but I know that I have seen it quite a few times since it was released. I think that my experience with the first original Pitch Perfect movie was that it just did really bring a lot of people together, which I guess explains why it made so much money this its opening week. I did not see that coming. Total underdog. And I think it was fun. My favorite things about this Pitch Perfect 2 were that I felt like they didn't shy away from their jokes. They just went for them. It was, my theater was laughing out loud. I saw it with a good friend of mine. It was just a great, like, bring people together movie. Am I putting this down for the best storytelling or the most innovative approach to film? No, I think that, you know, you go into this expecting a lot of singing and dancing and some good jokes, and on all those notes, you get it.
Nice pun.
But if you are going to this trying to be like, I want to see really full through story arcs and things to come full circle and to be surprised, it doesn't really offer that as much.
Right.
Which I can forgive it for, because sometimes all you want is, you know, laughter is good for your health.
It is. Phil, how about you?
You know, I didn't see Pitch Perfect in theaters. In fact, I thought Pitch Perfect was Fever Pitch for a long time. So I thought it was a baseball movie.
Wrong one.
And, you know, then I saw it one time when I was sick, and, you know, it was good. And then this one started coming out, and I got excited for this one. To Sarah's point, the storytelling, very predictable, but there's no shame in knowing where a story's going as long as you can enjoy it. And they made us enjoy it the whole way through. I thought they, in terms of the jokes, as you mentioned, they went for it. I mean, this movie, there were some kids in this movie with parents, and they were talking about boobs and vajayjays and all everything in between. I was like, oh my God.
And racism and
sexism
and politics. And
yeah,
there was a lot there. So, but, you know, I enjoyed it. I like that we kind of expanded the universe a little bit since the first movie. Mm-hmm. So we weren't dealing with the same type of stuff. And original songs were great. The not original songs were great. So, and I liked that. Here's the thing. I have to say Das
Sound Machine
is a little better to me.
Okay. All right.
If I was judging, I would pick them.
We'll get into it. First of all,
I might be with you.
I was a huge fan of Pitch Perfect, the first movie, because I was a big fan of Glee. So this totally up my field, my demographic. I love musicals. I love when people sing on screen. It's fun. It's fascinating. There's always fun dancing and music. So, of course, I was going to love Pitch Perfect, the first one. And then, as great as that was, because when I walked out of that film, I was immediately, while I was walking back to my car, I was immediately downloading the soundtrack. So, yes, great impact. the first time, and then coming into the second one, I was so excited. And watching this in my theater, I'm not the person who raucously laughs out loud, but I was laughing at everything, and I loved it. So many jokes, and I saw this film twice. And so I laughed a lot the first time, and then I laughed even more the second time because I caught all the jokes that didn't catch the first time. I was like, I didn't realize how funny it was, and I really enjoyed it. We'll get into it. Second time around, Elizabeth Banks, who produced it the first time, she is now the director for this one. What did we think, having gone from producing to now directing, did you enjoy the direction that Pitch Perfect 2 went? Fairly simple and straightforward.
To me, the direction very much highlighted Elizabeth Banks' strength, and that we got a lot of comedy coming from very different characters, even ones that you might not know their character's name or their full story, but even they can bring you to a laugh. So without even knowing someone, or like, for instance, we get so many laughs with Fan Amy, and a lot of that comes from the fact that now you followed her character, you know her a little bit more. But within Elizabeth Banks' direction is you get laughs from very unknown characters. For instance, we had Dex on come into AfterBuzz and do a spotlight on, I believe.
Sean Carter Peterson, mm-hmm. Yes.
And, like, that wasn't a character we really fully got to know, but she could still make you laugh with his very small interactions. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, as far as storytelling goes, and I do think this should have been a little bit more Elizabeth Banks' job, is I felt that there were certain things that were introduced and focused on at the beginning of the film that weren't, to me,
the internship,
whether it's the internship, or to me, there was a setup for a B plot line of people finding not only their place for, like, the Bellas and what the Bellas should be doing now, but also their place in what to do next. And to me, that wasn't fully explored. And the only person who did have any inclination what to do next, besides Anna Kendrick, who starts already looking, is Hailee Steinfeld's Haley's character, and yeah. She's the youngest. So to me, that was a little bit missed. Like, I wanted to see other people branch out and realize the real world was coming, because it was introduced and it was focused on. It was also when we brought back the old leader of the Bellas, and she's a camp director. That, to me, is also pointing towards that storyline. So that didn't come full circle for me. And there was a couple of things like that. Also, we had so many characters that it was very... sometimes I wanted more of each individuals, and whether that be more at the internship or more of the love stories that we had in the first movie, or even, like, they even joke amongst themselves that there are certain Bellas who we don't even get to know, and they're in both films. That, to me, is kind of a misstep.
Yes. And to go off of the writing, Kay Cannon, who also wrote the first film, she came back for the second one. And she said that more the writing storylines were, because it is a sequel, they don't want to, like, always go back to the first one. It's like everyone, it's for this sequel, it's like, you know who the characters are, you know what the story is like. Mm-hmm. For Becca and her boyfriend, that you know, they have already been established. Mm-hmm. And so they wrote the relationship for a different pairing, which was Fat Amy and Bumper. So it was like different types of stories for different type of people.
But I think there's a progression that can continue regardless, you know what I mean? Just, we don't have to see boy meets girl. Now we see progression of boy and girl.
Thank you. And that was the thing for me, is that, yes, we didn't stick with the same characters for relationship-wise as much, but we just got another, finally, boy and girl overcoming something to come together, which is what we got in the first film. We got Anna Kendrick's character struggling with the division between her and the troublemakers, but at the end they come together. And we don't really get to see the evolution of that relationship as much, besides that he's supporting her in what she wants to do. Mm-hmm. And then we see Fat Amy's relationship with Bumper also fighting this, like, they shouldn't be attracted to one another, or they're not supposed to be at this stage. And then at the end being like, nope, we're going to be together despite all of these obstacles. To me, that's very similar.
Mm-hmm. And
but I will say, to the credit of Elizabeth Banks, what I will say, you know, she was in the first movie. She's in this movie. What I like is she doesn't over insert herself into the scenes. She gives this canvas for other people. And I thought she did it. Her biggest challenge was always going to be, okay, how do you one-up the musical acts?
Mm-hmm.
And for that, I mean, you know, why we all love it, regardless of what we're nitpicking right now, is they did that. So, congratulations there to Elizabeth Banks and the rest of mm-hmm. the crew and cast.
Right, and we'll get into the music for sure. But also, Elizabeth Banks, when it comes to, like, introducing new storylines and new characters, as for our big main protagonist of this film, we had the Das Sound Machine, the German group. What do we think of this new rival into the storyline?
I loved their rival. They had advertised very much that this was going to be the Pitch Perfect Goes International.
Mm-hmm.
I was very surprised that really it was only in depth with one international group.
To be fair, in your second movie, just like D2, The Mighty Ducks, you always kind of deal mm-hmm. with like a Norwegian-esque. I mean, Germany's not quite up there.
You want to say like Eastern European-esque? You know,
the scary people.
Yeah. Did you know why
known for being tall.
Yeah.
You know why they chose a German nationality? Because a cappella is huge in Germany.
And they can make a David Hasselhoff joke.
Yes, exactly like that. But when they were making the second one and they were looking at all the different countries and where a cappella and singing is just big nationally and nationally known, Germany was a huge country that really delves into it. So.
What do you know about that? What is it like? Is it similar in style to that? Because that's a great style.
That I don't know. I personally don't. I didn't know Germany was big on a cappella as well, but it's a serious thing.
And Das Sound Machine was highly entertaining in this film. I thought that both of the leaders of the group were very unique and dynamic. Pita and, oh, I don't even know. I'm just going to call her like the Amazon woman. I actually, hold on, I have it. It was
Commissar.
Yeah, I was like, I can't pronounce that.
Commissar.
But I thought that they were very entertaining to watch. They fully committed to this a cappella, but more operatic, robotic.
Aka techno.
Techno group. they added a different dynamic to me, which was we've seen the kind of girly fun. comedy side of a cappella, and you can really take that these guys take it seriously.
I like how condescending they were. That was funny.
I loved it because it was so typical of like just like a sports movie, right? Mm-hmm. And even though it's like about saying there's an aspect of sports to it, right? Competition, certainly. And I enjoyed that. And what I realized as I was talking, we were talking about why Anna Kendrick's character was sexually confused, if, among other things, with Commissar.
I can't say it.
And it just made me realize, one of the reasons why I like this movie, whether I want to admit this or not, it's a world that maybe I want to be a part of, but I definitely don't know how to insert myself. I don't know the rules, and I definitely will never be in it, ever.
Phil just really wants to be an a cappella star.
That's his secret.
He wants to be in the
secret
sound
goal
machine.
In life. He's just afraid to admit it. I mean, it's such a great
and
sport.
Pillow fights would be a bonus.
There you go.
There was a pillow fight.
There was.
We did bring fight. Women back 30 years. Or whatever she said it
but
was.
But you know what? I didn't mind that because it shows that they're still family. They're still having fun despite everything that just happened.
Yeah.
I mean, that is one of the benefits of this movie, is they are constantly throwing in elements of fun. We get a lot of locations, a lot of short, different scenes. Some of them that I'm not quite clear what the exact point of them was, except for to show that these people have fun. It's the pillow fighting scene. It's the camp montage of, like, all of the
retreat.
Retreat obstacles. The...
Have you ever been on those?
Yes, I have. I'm not kidding. In high school, I was part of choir, and we did a cappella, and we did all sorts of stuff. And I'm almost positive it was at the exact same place.
Really?
Like, I was like, this looks so familiar. It that was one of my favorite things about this movie. Was I was like, because it really hit home. I was like, yep, I believe that they would do this because yep. I was forced to do it.
It's team bonding. I've done that. It wasn't for singing, but I've done mm-hmm. that just for like group and leadership type of things. And I was always the first one that they had to throw over, not throw, but like lift over the log because mm-hmm. I was one of the smaller ones, so I could like help people go over. But yes, fun. I enjoyed that. I mean, more time with the girls, especially, you know, they're trying to rebuild emotionally.
Also, you pointed out this movie is just about enjoying getting through it, and that is why you enjoy it. There's a lot of scenes that are just kind of there for the fun of having them. Yeah. Maybe to set up a little bit of exposition or to give you some plot, but when we go into the random house that has like a secret entrance into an acapella battle with a giant
fight club, the yes, fight club ripoff.
All of these are just constantly finding new ways to have fun and new, whether it's in a mansion, it's in outside with these trees, it's at a party, a college party, it's at the office. It's just. Well, finding new locations.
I mean, here's the thing. You had to have that moment of them, the sound machine and them. They had to kind of interact throughout the whole movie. And they interacted less and less up until the finale, so to speak. So to have that, you needed it. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, okay, what excuse can we come up with for them to sing off in any way? Well, here's this weirdo guy that loves a cappella.
And we're going to shade you from the ridiculousness of their circumstances by adding in the Green Bay Packers, because now you're going to focus on the ridiculousness of them being
okay.
there.
Well, let's talk about this whole riff-off scene, because I thoroughly enjoyed it. I loved the first riff-off from the first one, because mm-hmm. that was such a huge scene that a lot of people don't know like really existed, that people battle like that. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, they had to bring that into the second one for a new version. But also, Green Bay Packers. There's
stole
really,
the scene.
Yes. This is how they got involved with it. They're actually big fans of the Pitch Perfect 1 movie. And they tweeted out to Elizabeth Banks, like, hey, big fan. I don't follow football or Green Packers, so forgive me, I'm forgetting their names.
Aaron Rodgers?
No, Russell, I believe. Or the one of the main players, he tweeted out to Elizabeth Banks saying he loved it and he would just love a cameo. And somehow...
She's like, do you sing?
With the power of all
the
this...
The players
that
were Clay Matthews, David...
Matthews, that's
there
it.
There we go, Clay Matthews.
I think for Sarah, this is a lesson that if you tweet a director, you will be cast in a movie.
I'm going to say that he's already a famous person who I think provided something funny to add to this
you
movie.
You can't just run with a joke.
But it's also no. A lot of people would expect Green Bay Packers, the manly men, mm-hmm. really enjoying a film like this as well. So that I
plus
you
there's,
add
there's
that
an element
it.
Of there's a lot of sexual stuff, and so the Green Bay Packers certainly is not clean.
No, it wouldn't be the meat in that sandwich. That was funny. But so they made an agreement. They're like, they agreed that they would sing. They're like, you know, give us songs and we will practice. We are athletes. We will work hard to be in this movie if you cast us. And then somehow they performed and added the songs, which they didn't have choice over song choices for that. But that's how they got onto this film. But the ironic thing is the writer... Kay Cannon, she's actually from Chicago, and her family's big Bears fans, and so the fact that she had to write Green Bay Packers, if you're from Illinois, Wisconsin area, you know those are, like, the two rival teams. That's, like, Red Sox and who was the opposing, I don't know, for
Yankees?
I don't know, for baseball. You know, like, the two opposing...
The Lakers?
Yeah, two opposing
Lakers
sports
versus Celtics.
Teams.
You're talking about any rivalry.
Yes, any sports rivalry, but, like, Bears and Packers are humongous rivalries. And so the writer is Bears fan, but she had to write the Packers into the film. But she enjoyed it.
There's worse
she
things
made them
life.
Lose. I'm sure she's not feeling too bad about that. We're talking about... Speaking of rivalries, one thing that was sad to me, I don't want to start with a negative. So we transferred this whole thing into making an international battle. We've taken out a lot of the college that was originally Pitch Perfect, although they are still in college, which just kind of eliminated that plot line, which part of me was like, aw, but that's so much of what the acapella world is when you do make this, the pedestal, like the pinnacle of your life is being part of this acapella team. And that kind of dissolved away from me a little bit. Like,
I mean, I don't know. You had time-wise, right? If you did like a screen count, you had elements of it with the new girl. You had the party.
Mm-hmm.
You had the mom who just loved talking about like her college days, and then spending time in the their little sorority house type. Mm-hmm. So you know. And internships in general, right? So they obviously was there, just that wasn't the point.
Yeah.
Despite the time.
It was a needed sacrifice, especially to make things bigger, take a movie and put it to a bigger scale.
Literally international scale.
What about the inciting incident of all of this? That, like, just the fact, like, first off, I didn't think, like, how could you have this girl just hang on whatever, like a bed sheet. Yeah, silks.
Silk sheets.
Like, for safety alone, you would have some sort of harness, whether invisible or not. No,
people perform in silks all the time.
I mean, Cirque du Soleil and when I do that all the time.
Okay, fair enough.
But, I mean, when they were filming it, they obviously put her on harnesses along, but Rebel Wilson did do 5 months of training because she did her own stunts, and she had to do the strengthening and conditioning for that as well.
But here's the thing. I want to ask her because, you know, not that she's here, but I would love to, you know, she was supposed to mess up, so why even train for that? You just got to, like, flip.
Well, when you're hanging in the air for, like, 4 hours a day, yeah, that's going to get exhausting.
Fair enough.
As for the inciting incident, to me, at least, this movie stuck true to its form. The inciting incident of her flashing
The president,
everybody, which was a wonderful cameo, and world was very, like, push it to its limits. Let's do something outrageous that no one wants to see. I don't know exactly how to phrase that. But it just was to the character of
this is not appropriate
community
to see in that moment. How about that?
There we go.
Yes.
I liked how they did start off this film, because 3 years have passed, and they quickly explained that in the first 3 minutes, that they've already won all these national championships. They are top dogs now. No one can beat them. And then you start off with this big, exciting incident, and like, they're immediately crushed, and they're back on ground level. So it's like that whole rebuilding. Like, okay, we started at the top, now we're back at the bottom.
They have a lot of strong building blocks, that being one. They acknowledge that they have not had any competitors. They've put them at the position of winning, so we know that we have to see them fall. Mm-hmm. And we don't get we get the inciting incident of the fall, but we just keep seeing them take steps down the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
The first step is that they're shunned and their title is stripped. The second step, that they can't go through recruitment. Mm-hmm. Then they have that first performance that it's an utter failure. Like, we see them lose
who they are.
Exactly. And it's a gradual fall. So they set that up really nicely. They also give you the new character of the incoming freshman,
Emily,
which is the new meat. Also, the potential to continue this world, because you have people graduating and needing to find lives. That's a good building block to set up. Also, they do include other characters who we suppose have come in these past 3 years of competition, and give them each personalities, jokes, their own funny things. So they set up, I felt like the premise was really strong.
To me, I really like the girl who was all about, I had diarrhea for 7 years.
Well,
so there are
Chrissy Fitt, who actually did come to AfterBuzz TV Studios to do an interview as well. You should listen to her. Mm-hmm. She was fun.
Yeah, I thought that was a good element of it. It's like, this is the worst thing in life.
Not really.
No, definitely. I thought they were really funny. Tons of new, exciting. It's hard, though, because we didn't get... I wanted more stories. I wanted a fuller story from some of our characters. For instance, we got two returning characters from Pitch Perfect who were in the Bellas and came back, and we made a joke about the fact that we didn't even really know their names, but that made me want to know more about them, especially knowing that these actors are very trained singers and dancers and got into this movie in the first place because of their vocal talent. I want to explore them a little more, maybe give them a solo, maybe have them win or lose the riff off. Things like that, where they had so many characters that were funny and interesting that it kind of made me, it was bittersweet because I wanted to know more about them.
Fair enough. I mean, yeah, I think absolutely in that way. I mean, the biggest struggle, you know, when you do a movie like this, do you just like pie chart it and be like, okay, we got to spend this time with this time, you know what I mean? Like, you can look at it scientifically of how to assign what to you know, time wise to who. But it's always going to come down to a feeling, you know, and what's right rather than, okay, what seems to work
numbers wise. Well, this movie also chose not to make any character sacrifices.
Yeah.
We sacrificed time with them, but we didn't really lose any characters completely. We had characters who should have been out of the picture because of timeline, but were made excuses for coming back or sticking around. We went and visited. Like, we didn't get rid of any of our leading protagonists from the first film.
I thought Bumper, he was the most not saying that it was bad in the plot or whatever, because it did bring great moments. But in terms of what you could have done, you could have gotten rid of him altogether.
Or I think Dax, the intern at the state, they gave him a lot of lines.
I didn't like that part, only because it's just so stereotypical. Like, how are you a successful record company with this amount of, like...
this idiot.
this amount of incompetency.
Mm-hmm.
So,
because he is the visionary, Becca's boss. That is his
right. But I didn't see him come up with a vision. Like, what vision did he come up with?
But I think that's exactly the reason for his character, to show that he is just the person, like, why is he there? How is he still there? Mm-hmm. But he's the only person that shows that he's so bad there at his job there. It makes Becca look good.
No, but I'm not saying, I'm saying the boss in particular. I never saw, you know, apart from coming up with an album for Snoop Dogg. Like, he didn't have a solution of, like, why this is bad, what we should do, etc.
He didn't verify his genius, or we didn't have any visual representation.
Well, he sleeps on a bed of Grammys.
And that's all one thing, but how did he get those Grammys? Like, is this guy just want? He's, you know, I mean, if the whole point is that he's looking for an original idea, and he's trying to find originality, much like Becca, right? That's her name?
Becca.
Then that could have worked, and the two in tandem could have their great moment of, like, hey, Becca, you are original, and I've always been original, but I just need to find my voice again, and blah, blah, blah.
For me, it was they portrayed a lot of interesting characters who... You could tell the actor really committed to that point of view, but we didn't get a lot of exploration into any of them. Versus in the first movie, you really get to know Becca. Like, you really get to see her as a character. You get to see what she's struggling with her home life, now going to college, what she wants. And in this movie, the only person that you kind of get to know on a little bit of a better level is Emily, or Hailee Steinfeld's character. She's the only one who we know also has another passion, has the history of her mom, and has an excitement and a sadness. Like, she's the only one who has any arc, and she's not in it. Percentage-wise, she doesn't take up more of the movie than a lot of other characters.
Right. Well, it's just difficult to go deep when you know. I mean, Marissa saw this twice, and then if she sees it a third time, I'm sure there's still jokes that she missed. So when you have that amount of jokes flying at that pace, yeah, how deep can you really get?
But that's the thing. The first one was funny, and I'm going to say I like the first one better because I did have more of a connection to the character. This one, I was drawn into the characters because they were interesting and appealing. I didn't really get the chance to fully connect with any of them because there were so many. I'm not saying they weren't funny. I'm not saying they weren't entertaining. I'm not even saying, like, this was a good movie because it was constantly entertaining. It just wasn't, there wasn't a depth to a lot of it.
Yeah, they were more one dimensional the second time around. I agree with that. I really do. And I liked the big cast, the fact that we did bring new people, because, again, if you keep going back to your same people, you might get tired of them, as fun as they are. But it's like, yeah, you're going to want to see, especially if you bring it to a worldwide level, there's so many other people that do the same things that these people are doing. Who are they like? Or, like, what are they like? Mm-hmm. And who are these type of people? So, like, what, I did like that. What do
you
guys think of,
you know, Emily's the biggest kind of new person apart from DOS Sound Machine duo there. What do you guys think of her?
I like Hailee Steinfeld. She was great in True Grit. So to bring her into a film like this, like, I know her from that movie. But to bring her into a really fun type of character, I didn't know she could sing. And we'll get it into later, but she actually did land, Hailee Steinfeld did land a record deal at Republic Records, so good for her. So she has a music career coming down the pipe as well. I liked her character, and I thought it was new, bringing in a whole storyline that there's legacies, because every single time there's like, we do this for, we've been part of the acapella group, Bard and Bellas, for years and years and years, and but to actually have another story is like, no, this is tradition. This is an elite type of exclusive group. So I liked how they brought that into it.
I thought she brought a sense of youth to it. I thought she did have a lot of, especially energy-wise, she had a lot of energy in a lot of, in her scenes. She added in the element of the original song, helping them find their sound, becoming really part of this group, bringing, of course, Flashlight into the mix, which became like this movie's anthem or one of their signatures. So she was fun.
I didn't think you needed the love story, though, with her, as I realize it now, more like Bumper we could have lost. However, if we're gonna, I feel like we could have kept Bumper versus, like, she didn't need a thing. And I thought
with Benji,
Jesse could have brought the flashlights at the end, and it could have been a nice tie into to him supporting Becca and doing it that way.
We but did also, a lot of quantity in this film.
We did.
Cool. There was lots of quantity over
quality. I don't know if I want to say quality.
But okay, I get that. Maybe we could have given, but also just for the character, Flashlight was Emily's song. But it was sung by, it started by Becca, but that ended with Emily.
It needed the synergy of the two of them, right? That was the whole thing, like, hey, we should work together. And they did the mashup, and then they did the original song, through these, it was the perfect marriage of the two of them coming together, becoming friends, and so on and so forth.
My question is, who did you guys feel this story was about? Because the first film is very much a story about Becca, and about her inclusion into this group, the Bellas. In this movie, I'm not really sure whose story it is.
Becca's.
Because to me, it's not completely Becca's.
It's not completely, but if I had to point the direction anywhere, it's Becca simply because she found her originality.
And I guess the fact that she does have talent to be a music producer.
But we are, in my opinion, we already know that. In my opinion, we already learned that about Becca in the first film, was that it was her embracing her talent and showing that she could do this. And I didn't learn a whole lot more, except for now she not only did this, but she can do this with some help. I felt like the story was kind of partially Becca's, partially Emily's, and then there was, of course, what the Bellas were going through. To me, I don't think it narrowed in enough on someone's one person's perspective, or at the same time, I didn't get deep enough into everyone's opinion on what they were going through. I knew that they needed each other. I knew that this was about being able to find their sound and realize sometimes that less is more. And that there's a power in being genuine, and there's a power in being simple instead of throwing flames and silks and hula hoops. But I'm just kind of like, whose story is this? Like, what do we see next? What do we learn about each of these characters that we didn't already know? Because I already knew that Becca was being persistent, but also had some fear. I've also learned that she can overcome them. For Emily, she also has some fear and talent, and then she overcomes it. I wanted
Because I think Fat Amy's kind of progression was admitting her insecurities. Mm-hmm. Because I think she, you know, as a character, she masks a lot of the things that she feels through jokes. Mm-hmm. Do you guys feel if there was an arc that she achieved it?
I
think she just embraced it more than she already has.
Mm-hmm. Well, she has insecurities and then she's just going to tell jokes?
She becomes vulnerable through song. Mm-hmm. And they embrace each other because she sings to him and he joins her.
All right, yeah, let's talk about the scene. So we had the whole dinner with Bumper and Amy trying to define their relationship, and then Amy says no. And then later on, she finally admits subconsciously.
Which is pretty pitchy to me.
Yeah. Freudian ways, like, she really is in love with Bumper. I do have to admit, this was my favorite scene of the whole film. Because I laughed throughout the entire thing. This was when I was, like, obnoxiously laughing out loud because it was so damn funny. The We Belong, plus, I love Pat Benatar. What do you think of her performance and just her going across the lake in a very comedic way and then trying to cross the road, like, I'm soloing here!
Comedic timing, wonderful.
Yeah.
Pauses and song breaks, like the throw-ins of, like, I thought this lake was a lot smaller.
Breathing
it's
heavy.
It's funny. Like, you could take this scene alone and just, it's its own little story, and it's great. And you can do that with a lot of this movie, where you could just
It slowed down momentum. We were finally going somewhere, and then we take this complete tangent and go off on this.
We have a lot, and that's a lot of what this movie is. They're great tangents. They are fun, and they keep the audience laughing, and it's a new turn, and part of that is because it comes kind of out of, oh, and now we're over here. But it is a bunch of short, funny situations that we put together, and I needed a little bit more of a through line to make this, if it wanted to beat for me, and I'm not saying that movies need to be about that. If it needed to top the first movie, I needed a little bit more of that. This was still fun. And I think that they very much accomplished their goal of creating an energetic, funny girls being pitches movie. Like, that was the goal, and I think they did that. I don't think you walk into this movie being like, I want drama, intense character study. I'm saying this point on this is what it didn't have compared to as much to what the first one had.
Do you think it? Oh, let me ask. Does it owe a social responsibility of teaching something to girls? Because it felt like it kind of was trying to do that to the extent that it fully managed it. I don't know. But,
like an overall message to females?
Yeah, there's, you know, someone, if you're a young girl, like, okay, how to get through college? How to, what do you do after graduation? Like, it's all these things. How do you become friends? How do you tell, how do you tell someone you love them? How do you say the hard stuff when you don't want to, as in the case when Becca was hiding the fact that she did have an internship? Whatever.
Mm-hmm. I don't really think it's the how. It's more so that, yes, everybody goes through this because, and it's just explaining to everyone's like, yeah, you're going to go through these hardships. You're going to be afraid of life after college. You don't know what you're going to do. And you can't really answer how do you handle that because everyone has different situations and how they deal with those situations. But I think it's the overall message. Like, you're not alone in this. Everyone goes through it.
I think also they put out a good message of, like, acceptance and friendship and, like, what that means. Like, how you accept, because the beauty of the Bellas is that all of the Bellas are kind of flawed in their own way. Mm-hmm. And everyone in the group is very aware of how they're flawed. For instance, you have the whispering girl who just whispers very strange things. And they kind of give her that look, but she's still very much included in the group. So I think there is that, like, acceptance and friendship and unity, and they try not to throw each other under the bus. They, also, for instance, when Emily fails at, she starts singing Flashlight at the battle. And instead of a shaming scene, or instead, we do get, like, of course, Brittany Snow's character overreacting for a minute, but that's part of her own flaws. We get her forgiven, and she's still included. And it's not like she has to earn back completely their trust or prove herself more. They just still include her. It was just a mistake that she made when learning. So I do think they have a really good foundation in that, and that this group of girls accepts each other, and it's about, like, learning from your own mistakes and, like, the flaws that you made and returning to yourself and accepting, like, your legacy and showing, like, scum. So I think that that message is nice, and it's fun to show that there's a bunch of girls who isn't necessarily perfect.
And they're not just friends, they're family now. Because now, and I like the fact that in this film, they're all living together. It's like their own sorority in a way.
And certainly great, like, for the lesbian girl.
Yeah, she enjoyed that.
She's getting married to someone else that we don't see.
But to show that, yes, they are not alone. And and I think Becca said that the line perfectly is, like, I'm not going to remember all the singing and performances. I'm going to remember you guys. Because everything they did, they were together. Which I found very sweet.
I was just saying, we're talking about performances. Do you want to get a little bit into the music of this?
Yeah, I mean, we can. I did actually want to bring in, there were a lot of cameos. And a lot of cameos.
Snoop Dogg!
It's very funny when you, like, look at the IMDb page. And normally you have, like, the they, like, put them in billing order or, like, top cast.
Right.
And normally it's, like, you can get through half the first page and then you start getting into your extras or your stuntmen.
The world.
Or, like, the people that, a lot of them are unrecognized. For the Pitch Perfect 2 IMDb page, you have to click into, like, the full cast and crew to get to names you, like, don't know or characters you don't recognize. There's just so many people in this movie that do have their own special spotlight.
Yeah. I loved it, too. I mean, we talked about Green Bay and Keegan, Michael Kay, but Pentatonix, also very well-known a cappella group, thanks to Sing Off. And, but what threw me off the first time, because they represent the Canadian team that's performing. I was like, they're not Canadian, it's, which threw me off. I was like, no, okay, but I was, like, really looking forward to them because I thought we'd get them at a riff-off or something, because even months ago when they were filming, there was the whole news that Pentatonix is also going to be in Pitch Perfect. I was like, oh, yes, this is going to be awesome. And we saw them for 1 second. Not even.
Yeah, but, I mean, again, speaking of all...
Pentatonix movie.
Yeah, speaking of all the characters that we had, like, you know, there's no way you can give now these guys more stuff to.
Yeah.
And the benefit is to you know them. Obviously, we all can say we like Snoop Dogg. Like, you don't need much of Snoop Dogg because there's a lot established there, and they are playing themselves now. Whether, you know, they're playing themselves to a ridiculouser extent. You know, Snoop Dogg saying, that's groovy. I know.
Groovy like a drive-in movie.
And he was great and funny.
I liked him. And then also we had Flula Borg, who plays the male antagonist of DOS Sound Machine, who's a big YouTube star. And I personally didn't know him, but I guess he's a humongous YouTube sensation. He's a comedian. He's very musical inclined, and that's how he got onto Pitch Perfect.
Well, I think he did a good job. I don't know him as a YouTube star. I also don't know the Pentatonix. I just kind of went into this movie just for the movie, and I think he did a fantastic portrayal. Him and his co-antagonists were funny and dramatic and very intimidating.
Yeah, and then we also had Reggie Watts, comedian as well. He's a singer, beatbox, stand-up comedian. He was the man with the fro, the afro, and the male group, the alumni singing group at the riff-off. So.
Penn Malasa was Team India. And the Philharmonic as Team Philippines.
Yes.
Well, at the end competition. Which we
have where
they all sing the same song.
Yeah.
Except for the two lead groups that sing a different songs.
Okay, yeah, Sarah, before we went live on air, so you were mentioning that for the whole montage of mm-hmm. all the different groups singing at the international performances, you had an issue that it was the just one song.
Yeah, so I was bothered by the fact that when we got to the international competition, I want to see an international competition. And if the competition is, hi, all of these teams need to perform the same song, and whoever does the best rendition wins, great. But what we got was 75% of the team seemed sang the same song mm-hmm. in different ways. And then we got to our two final teams, which are, of course, were last, and they sung their own things. And to me, that really broke the line of realism.
To be fair, if this was a real competition, here's how I imagine it to be. Number one, that's phase one, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Phase two is you get a set, you pick from a list of 20 to use four. Mm-hmm. And then you do something that you totally want on your own.
Yeah, but it just really broke the realism for me. And if it's...
By the way, I'm starting that competition tomorrow.
Also, like, one of the things about sports movies, competition movies, is you have to increase the chance that anybody could win. And, like, we do know that it's going to get to the final two, but I want to see the third person compete. I don't want to pretend that we live in a world where no one else matters and it's all about these two teams. Mm-hmm. That, and especially when it is bringing in cameos that are all singing the same song. It takes me out of the film and it makes me go, did you really make them all sing the same song so you could film a montage? Like, especially when I know that this movie has founded itself on being very good at mixes, when you know that DJs can transfer flawlessly from one song to the next. Like, you could have picked complimentary songs that fade in and out to one another. You mm-hmm. could have done remixes. There's so much you could have done versus do the same song and then break that line and add in new songs, and that... It just pulled me out, and it didn't make me as invested in the competition.
I think a greater issue that they just face automatically, and so I don't know how you address, but...
Music rights.
No, not music rights. No, not about that. It's the fact of, okay, they were all very nervous about what DOS Sound Machine did, and it was like, okay, can we win? Well, you know your routine, so you know you either... It's either going to be good or it's not, you know. So then, because it's not like you're going out to play basketball where it's like, okay, it's decided on the court. Like, you literally play against each other. This is a competition of, okay, either our thing is better, either we are better than them or not. And so if you've just watched them, you can kind of decipher, okay, you know what? What we got certainly matches up to that.
Mm-hmm. Unless you have, like... But, a stunt or something that you don't know if we has been perfected yet.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly the point, because as an audience, you don't know what it is that they mm-hmm. want to pull off. Mm-hmm. Whereas in their mind, they know, okay, they have the worry of like, oh shoot, we got to pull off the big whatever the stunt is. And mm-hmm. so it's just an inherent problem that they had. I thought they dealt with it overall well. Mm-hmm. The one song montage, it is what it is.
Yeah, and like to point out, for instance, an example of how they did do that in the first film was that we had the fear of, I want her to say her name's Aubrey. Aubrey's character hurling. Mm-hmm. Like that was a fear. It wasn't always necessarily about how good or if their set was up, is avoiding that catastrophe that no matter if they had the best set prepared ever, it could ruin the whole thing and they could lose. And as the audience, we hoped that she had the ability now to get through that. So, for instance, for me, it would have been interesting if they all did have to do the same song or something, because mm-hmm. then it would be based on reception. I don't know, it was just... It became a little too clear that it was just between them, and now they were in their own separate worlds, and the rest of the competition didn't really seem to matter.
See, but I didn't mind the one song mm-hmm. because with a lot of competitions, movies, and movies that have a lot of teams, you can't spend so much time on every single team. You're going to have a montage in there. If you go with songs, like each song, like each group usually have a set of three songs. It's like if you go to every group with three songs, that's already like 30 mm-hmm. minutes. So I get that's where the direction was for the Germans and the Bard and Bellas.
I think that here's the thing, they could have done it, they should have just played a joke in there of like, can you believe everyone picked the damn same song? God, this song's so popular.
Well, it actually, Journey is the popular song.
It is, but that's what I'm saying. Like, you know what I mean? Because it's something that you've already established that you have so many jokes, just throw one more in there and you're off the hook at least a little bit.
And mm-hmm. I think that particular song might be another reason why they just went with one song, because almost every Journey song has been covered. Like, in movies and television. Glee does a whole, like, several episodes just dedicated to Journey. Mm-hmm. So, and I think maybe just for production and music, mm-hmm. budget-wise.
People, pick a different... There's more Journey songs. Wheel in the Sky. Go with that one. Whatever.
I'm glad they didn't do Don't Stop Believing.
But there's so many others. Just pick another.
But I mean, it bothered you. I didn't mind it so because I wanted to get straight to... the Germans mm-hmm. and Bart and Bella. So I was like, okay, yes, competition, go.
Here's the thing, if you're gonna just do that, just don't even show the rest of them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it is what it is. Like, you don't need to...
You say, oh, and the Canadians did really well, and blah, 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 and you just skip it.
And
yeah, that's it, you know, and you would have saved yourself some money, too.
Yes. For sure, but then you wouldn't have to say, then you wouldn't have the, we have this cameo in there.
You can still film like 5 minutes of it and then just use it as like a little, whatever, replay monitor without audio. Done. I could produce these things.
Well, yeah, there was the whole projection behind them. But what do we think of the actual performances? We'll start with Das Machine, Sound Machine. What do we think of their songs for the international performance?
9.5.
Okay. Right.
They sung My Songs, Know What You Did in the Dark, and
can
All
we,
I Do
can
Is
Can we play that? No, I mean, can we play it underneath so we just kind of have it as like a reference point? I can pick out stuff.
I could play it right here, but the audio would not be good.
No, I want it from the booth.
He wants to make his own commentary.
Yeah. I want to be John Smith. Right? It's John Smith.
You could be Elizabeth Banks.
John Michael Higgins plays John Smith, yes.
Oh, his character. So misogynistic. True misogynistic at heart, and that's the line from the first movie.
I think.
His character, I do have to laugh at him, only because, like, I don't take those jokes seriously, as some people might, but it's like, okay, you have him. In the first movie, there was always the whole theme of gender politics, and that's still being translated to this one.
And even that's why girls shouldn't go to college.
Yeah, that was terrible.
It's funny how I, like, laugh about it in the film, and then when Phil says it, I'm like, what'd you say?
What? I was just quoting.
You shouldn't quote this.
I was simply quoting.
For some reason, it, like, exists in the box of the theater, and in that theater, I find it funny, and then you come out of the theater, I'm like, I don't find it funny anymore.
So you give it a 9.
Oh, I was giving the Das Sound Machine very high scores. I liked the Das Sound Machine group. I really enjoyed the...
DSM is going to make you jump.
Yeah.
Well, I think that it's... I know from watching these movies that a lot of these singers are extremely, extremely talented. Mm-hmm. I would say sometimes even more talented than the movies give them credit for. Anna Kendrick, of course, we've been very... aware of her musical talents, from Broadway to Into the Woods to the last 5 years, she has a lot of singing appearances.
Yep.
But also when you get into the other minor characters also have strong backgrounds in singing, in a cappella. They're very talented people. And I felt like musically, when I would hear some of the Das Sound Machine's work, I could hear those other layers. Like, some of their songs had a more operatic tune. It wasn't so peppy and as pop-sounding as a lot of the a cappella we've been hearing. Mm-hmm. It had this depth and, like, classical nature to it, which to me did stick with their, like, very, like, being trained, like, rigorous training and efficiency and precision, which is very much the tools in classical music. So I liked that element. I liked that different sound that we got to hear.
Right. I did enjoy Das Sound Machine. I loved their performance. That the whole flashy lights and the fire explosions and fireworks behind them, that was fun. And I get that's what established their group and what makes them intimidating and threatening is like, oh, can we beat them? Because they are so in your face and very talented in that way. I get that intimidation factor.
They speak 8 languages, but Loser is not one of them.
I thoroughly enjoyed those songs and their performance mm-hmm. a little bit more than what the Bard and Bellas did.
That's the problem.
Okay, so speaking about Bard and Bellas, I like the songs. I did like the performances. I think they went with simple, short, simplistic.
Here's the thing. They were...
And sentimental. That's their winning factor.
How you could have done this, right? Mm-hmm. This is where story hindered it a little bit, because the whole song was playing on nostalgia. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because I just rapped Mad Men forever that I can talk about nostalgia in that way. But that's how it had you really, like, that song brought tears to people. And even, you know, because first off, you're going in with an original song that we as an audience don't know, right? Yeah. So you could have, like, made it up like, oh, that's an original song, but it's really a Rihanna song that we all know and love. So you have that as an obstacle to overcome. And so when you have that, I think you need to pull at some of the more the heartstrings in that way and figure out how to do it. And there was a play there, and I don't think they quite utilized it, because it's dicey to do that. And I don't know. Like, if I had to really break down, I'm still with Dow Sound Machine as being the winners of this competition, which is not good. They make me hate the movie. I loved it, but...
Well, Booby did have the original song, Flashlight. And that, do you think Flashlight is up to par with what Cups was from the first Pitch Perfect movie, which was Billboard top charting song?
Well, they introduced it a couple times, right? So it's not like
four
it just
times.
Came
they in. Sang Flashlight four mm-hmm. times in this film.
So they try to get you to know it.
I think that if I'm thinking about it, just on my, the thing is, I really feel like that comes to personal preference, mm-hmm. and you never really know how people are going to connect to music and to a song. I think that everyone wants to write a song that emotionally or rhythmically affects someone. I think that's why you write songs, to get things out there, to get people on your side. And you never know how many people it's going to draw in. If I speak personally, I like Cups more. I just do. I can't even really tell you why. It's just something that feels very, like,
can we play Cops? I need a refresher. I need a refresher,
like,
on this
singing
one.
With your friends, like, it's, there's just a genuineness to it that I don't feel like it's trying very hard. Versus there was a pressure to make Flashlight the theme, the mm-hmm. hit of it. And while, like, the lyrics are fine and I understand, this is Cops.
Yes.
There you go. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Cups.
It's just... Thank you. It's simple and sweet, and I personally, my personal opinion is I like Cups more than Flashlight. But I would hope some people disagree with me.
Yeah, Cups was a very catchy song as well. Mm-hmm. It was very simplistic.
I think the technique of it, it was original in a different way. It utilized personality in a different way, and no offense to Flashlight, but how many songs can you write kind of in that same sentiment that could be equally as mm-hmm. good? And that doesn't mean it's not good, it's just we've kind of heard it in a different mm-hmm. way.
And Flashlight, the song was actually written by Sam Smith and Sia, mm-hmm. which I didn't know, but I was like, okay, Sam Smith, got it. I did like this for original song because, and I think a lot
it's
of...
It's a good song, I will say it, that. It,
it
really
is. But the thing with acapella, it's mostly covers and mashups and whatnot. And if you're going to throw an original in there, and I think that's what the film really does showcase, like, if you're going to throw an original song, it's going to throw people off. So I think that's why they had the whole song transition point from, all right, here's our mashups, now here comes down the lights, fade down the lights, and then get into an original. And I think mm-hmm. executing-wise, it was very well done.
It was well planned. It was definitely mm-hmm. planned so that, like, you would know it by the time we got there, so that you were emotionally already invested in that song and weren't taken off guard. Because, if, for instance, think about it this way. If they had filmed it where we knew that Emily's character was working on a song that we hadn't heard, like, maybe it would have been interesting to play with, like, you hear little bits of it, or you hear, like, one word, and then by the end, you're so curious that you want to know what it is. But
how did, can I ask that? How did,
Cups come into play?
No. 8 Mile do it. Because I equate that, because Lose Yourself became a huge song. Mm-hmm. It was a song in
We never actually heard the song in the movie, but it was like one of the songs they was writing.
It was kind of like, wasn't it? I might be misspeaking. I haven't seen this movie in a long time. Mm-hmm. I feel like it was a theme in the soundtrack.
So yeah, it wasn't a part of the thing.
Yeah, I feel like we were already familiarized with part of the song, so by the time we got there, it was more of like an intertwining of things we've already heard. Like, they put in elements of the song beforehand,
right?
I feel.
And the thing with 8 Mile and that particular song, there was not just things that we heard, but things that we saw. It's like, we saw Rabbit do X, Y, and Z. Like, he was living in a trailer, he was doing this, he was doing that. And then when we heard the lyrics in the song, it just reflected what the audience already saw. So that's kind of how the lyrics just came together.
Do you think they should have released it beforehand? Just a little bit quietly, any which way to kind of just...
I think they did. I know that they filmed with, what is her name? Jessie J. Yes. Filmed like a music video for Flashlight. And she sings the song and the Bellas, and it's filmed on the campus and the Bellas are in it and there's different characters in it. And she is singing this song. And I know that I saw that before I saw this movie.
Okay. So, see, I didn't. So the first time I heard Flashlight was in this film.
Yeah, I feel like if you know, I know it's kind of supposed to be the big surprise and everything else, but I feel like if you leaked it just strategically into the radio, top 40s, you would have had a better shot at it.
Okay. But let's go back a little bit to the riff-off. Because the riff-off itself has 17 songs in it. That's a lot. There's more songs than the first riff-off from the first one.
I was hoping for more, ironically. Even though that's a lot, I was hoping for more. Because, it seemed very quick. We went from one group, and then we made a round. Like, a lot of times we didn't even finish a round, and it was like, they cut off.
I mean, I think that was to them trying not to be systematic, and... I think the idea of the game is that it goes on until someone's out.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, I think that they tried to specifically be like, it can't always be the fourth person, the last person to sing out. Like, we have to switch up the timing. Like, the first person has to go out, the second person has to go out.
I get that, but the, who never went first? The Bellas. DOS sound machine went twice first time.
But the interesting thing is that what I read for the music coordinators and the producers for this film, they talked about the riff-off and that each section, you know how we have the different categories, every time they went to the next section, each song was faster beats. Mm-hmm. So just the section in itself built the emotional tension of the storylines that were going on with all these teams, like there's the tension building, and so subconsciously the music was getting faster near the end, and then that's where it all started just being partying at the end. So I thought that was like brilliantly well done that I didn't really think of that. Each category, it just upped the ante, which I thought was pretty cool. I liked it, and Elizabeth Banks said this was the Fight Club type of... She wanted that type of feel and
he had the gong, he had all those elements of... you gone!
And the 42K, ticket to Dave and Buster's.
Great. You have to have some sort of goal.
DMPs.
Great prize.
I love the Green Bay Packers' reaction to that. It's like, yes, that is winning. Not bragging rights, DMPs.
Well, I think that's what makes this movie funny is, like, they put high stakes on everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything is the best thing or the worst thing ever. Like, there's no mediocre reaction to Dave and Buster's. It is like, we all want the Dave and Buster's gift card. This is important. Like, they just amp up the stakes for everything in this movie.
Yeah. And then we hear a lot of mashups from the first one that, like, were very memorable. Well, how about the mashup between Snoop and Anna Kendrick and Becca? What do we think of the Christmas song that they were recording for his new Christmas album that had to be original?
Groovy like a drive-in movie.
Yeah.
I thought it sounded really, really cool. Also fit in with the very predictable mode. Like, they set it up to show that that's what was going to happen.
Yeah. Anna Kendrick actually said in an interview, because she sings Here Comes Santa Claus along with Snoop, that she wanted to sing a different Christmas song because Here Comes Santa Claus rhythm is very children type of song. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I could sing another Christmas song that was way more cooler. And you know, apparently she didn't win that argument, and she had
so
to sing
what,
that.
So what would a song like that be?
She didn't say the particular song, but she apparently she had another song in mind that she wanted to sing.
But what is a less children-y song
than Christmas?
You have to ask Anna Kendrick.
Yep.
I don't know what that means.
I'm not a mind reader.
What does that mean?
Yeah. But she apparently, she wanted to sing a different song, but she really enjoyed performing with Snoop because she said that he's just the most cool, chill person.
Santa Claus Came Down My Chimney, is that one that's more adult?
I saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus.
There you go. Hey-o.
Hey-o. I liked it because, again, the simple, with the music, what do you call that?
The little
little beatbox type of music.
You guys are very articulate.
I know. I'm not a music producer.
Whatever gets the point across.
That I liked. Overall, the music was really fun. And this soundtrack, Pitch Perfect 2 soundtrack, just made number one on the Billboard charts.
That's not. I'd be surprised if they weren't.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all.
Billboard 200 album chart. Knocking out Mumford and Sons and David Guetta.
How do we think that Haley Steinfeld's new record will do? That is the question.
I think she'll do good.
I think she'll. She has been
vocals.
Branded as a very put together, talented young lady. So I'm sure that people will be interested and curious and want to buy it.
Yeah. I mean, the good news, not to say that she can't act. But I feel like her character in this is very much like her personality. And so if you like her in this movie, which seems like a lot of people do, you'll like her music, you'll like her.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the marketing and promotion for this film. I mean, we already knew this was a sequel. I found out the day that they were going to make Pitch Perfect 2. I freaked out because I was just
so
freaking excited.
She marked her calendar.
I put it on Twitter. It was awesome, and I was excited. Billboards everywhere. But what I saw, which was really cool for me, because I am a big NBA fan, as Phil knows, but the NBA playoffs are currently going on now, being the springtime of 2015. But the playoffs are going on, and for promotional during commercials, we see the cast of Pitch Perfect singing the... in a cappella form, the NBA playoff theme song.
That's great marketing.
Amazing. They've done really strong marketing. Also, I would say that in comparison to a lot of films that have been out there, they've been doing a lot of team-like marketing, where they don't just send out they did send out Anna Kendrick to do quite a lot of press. But
yes.
Anna Kendrick and Rebel Wilson have done a lot of press solo.
They said... people to The Voice. They sent like three different cast members to The Voice. They really put it together as like a friendship thing, I felt. Where in the marketing, it was like multiple characters going and saying, go see this film. Which to me is very interesting. It's rare that if you're going to watch, let's just take a superhero movie. We'll talk about like Avengers. We didn't really see, you know, going to an NBA game and four of the Avengers showing up. Like, you'll see one, and they'll talk about it. You'll do an interview. You'll do a spoof. You'll do something. But it's not so often that you get to see a lot of the main characters all together at not sitting on a talk show couch, but in some sort of live audience arena marketing their film.
That's true.
And, you know, get the sports demographic into it. That's brilliant, brilliant. I loved it. And then also...
here's the thing. I think part of that is they knew they had people like Marissa as soon as they announced it. Right. So you're good there. So now it's about expanding the world of, you know, your audience. You have... that's why as a franchise, it's great. You have your core audience. You know they're hooked. Now how do we get some of the other people? Mm-hmm. NBA is perfect for that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
The voice.
People voice love scene. Singing.
And if you stuck around the credits, we had the whole bonus scene with Bumper singing at The Voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I did not stick around for that.
Then you missed it.
I like to get out.
Because there was the one line of his character. He's like, I'm on the waiting list for a very popular reality competition show, and it was for The Voice. I knew in my head, I was like, it has to be The Voice.
Well, they did promotion on The Voice, so
yeah, exactly.
It makes sense.
It's also a Universal movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
It would not make sense to have American Idol.
American Idol is now done. One more season.
No, it's not.
And one more season.
There's one more season.
That's what I just said.
No. But yeah, it wouldn't have worked. Yeah.
And then also Anna Kendrick, because we had the whole poster that this is a different photo, but there's the big promotional with the girls' standings and Pitch Perfect 2. And Anna Kendrick actually took a lot of photos from just fans in general posing with the arms crossed in front of
the poster.
And I believe we actually have some of those photos. And Anna Kendrick took those photos, put them in collages to promote to everyone. So it really got the main characters of the film involved and showing the love back to the fans. And we have a couple of those photos.
I think that if I was going to list the strengths of this movie, besides comedy, I think that you can make a study on comedic timing with this movie. Besides that, I think also the teamwork effect of a film is really strong with this. And, like, there is a family feeling, not only to the audience, but to how it was made. Especially with bringing Elizabeth Banks in, being that she was a member. She was an actor, producer, and it just...
Oh, here we go.
That grew. That grew for her. This, to me, very much feels like you could see this with your family, you can see this with your friends, because it was a movie made by people who act like family and friends.
Yes.
So this collage is overwhelming.
If you're listening in iTunes, definitely check out our YouTube video, as you can see.
Or post it on your Instagram.
Yeah, I'm posting it on Instagram.
You can search it for
this
Anna Kendrick.
This is through Anna Kendrick's Instagram. She personally made a collage of all of fans sending pictures of themselves posing in front of the poster. It's like, and these aren't the biggest ones. Honestly, they just keep getting bigger and bigger. There's more and more. It's crazy. It is overwhelming.
It's very involved. It's like bring the fans in, and they show their loyalty by bringing this movie huge numbers.
I mean, at this point, I feel like if Anna's going to put together a collage, she should make, like, you know, how the collages that form something else. Like, it should form a poster.
Yeah.
If you're going to put to that effort, Anna, I feel like you could go a little bit more.
But I'm sure that will be the next step.
She is personally doing this. This is her time. This isn't, like,
no, I know.
Her
she should totally. No,
this
I feel like
her.
She has more time on her hands, and she could do a full collage of the poster with using collages. Yeah.
Well, this film is definitely getting great reception, and it only had a 29 million budget, but made $70.3 million in its opening weekend.
Took number one.
Yes, blowing out Mad Max.
Mm-hmm.
What do we think of this?
I thought it was a wild card. I thought it was popular. I didn't think it was going to make that amount of money. You're talking about an opening weekend of like $70 million. That is more than the entire theater run for the first movie, because it had such a large audience from the DVD streaming, whatever, community. After it was out of theaters, that's when it really gained popularity. So it is doing so well. It's now bringing in about the same numbers, like this for the week numbers, it's been about the same as Mad Max, but definitely opening weekend numbers were higher, taking the number one spot, I think, to a lot of people's surprise.
Here's the thing, it's going to have trouble going up against Tomorrowland this weekend, I feel. But I think it'll still do well. I'm not surprised. Here's the thing. The fact that they advertised that we're back pitches, it just has this attitude to it that even if you haven't seen the first movie, you're like, I want to go see that. That is the movie. It just draws you in. I don't know how to explain it. I don't know what more to say about it, but it's ballsy.
It says fun. Mm-hmm. It says, like, this movie is going to be fun. We're not going to take ourselves too seriously. I would argue that Anna Kendrick has become an A-list star.
Yes.
Versus, I feel like in the first movie, this is what the Pitch Perfect launched her, made her a household name. She is now an A-list star who doesn't act like a model that just graces the covers. Like, she tries to maintain contact with her fans. She just keeps part of her, like, funny, fun personality, and I think that's really infiltrated the marketing and the feeling around this film.
Yeah. By the way, go see her in Bottle Rocket. Mm-hmm. I think that's a fun movie.
Yeah, and she's had a lot of musicals come out within 6 months. Into the Woods, Last 5 Years, now Pitch Perfect 2, and then she was also in Camp. So, like, Pitch Perfect 1 definitely launched her singing music and film career. I mean, Up in the Air got her in people's, you know, attention and recognition
critical
in that
acclaim.
Way. Critical acclaim. But that's a whole, I feel like the Academy Awards is a whole different type of attitude and demographic. And you have the serious level gravitas in that that sense. But this really, I feel, Pitch Perfect caters to so many different people that she got exposure to, which I love. And her career is only on the up and up. Only. But I loved it. What, anything else about this film? I'm definitely going to buy this film when it comes out. I might see it again in theaters.
I think that it's funny to me that if you watch this movie, I feel like you could just make a game of one-liners. Like, the amount of quotes and one-liners
so
in this movie
so
is insane. Like, it could, you could make your own, like, riff-off battle of memorizing one-liners from Pitch Perfect, and it could last a while. And that's so fun.
Yeah.
That's what I have to say about it. I was like...
You want to go out on that number?
No, I don't. I think that that's...
No, meaning, like, we do that.
I can't do that. I'm going to cheat and go to trivia.
Here's some trivia for you.
Again.
This Pitch Perfect 2 had over 60 songs in total. That's a lot. That's a lot of music.
But when you have mashups, when you're kind of going quick, it's a little bit easier. It's not like you had 3-minute 60 songs.
That would have been... Whew.
And last question to you. Do you think Pitch Perfect 1 and 2... And the success of Pitch Perfect 2 now, do you think it's good enough for a Pitch Perfect 3?
Absolutely.
No, I mean, I think money-wise, they've shown that they can bring in the audience. I think that if they do another one of these movies, I think you have to recognize that, and not everyone's going to love them for it, but you can't follow all the same characters again.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pick something to stay with. This time they tried to combine keeping all the characters and the school. You have to get rid of one. Either follow the group outside of college or follow some of the characters and what they're doing or what brings them back, or follow the group as it is. It doesn't, in my opinion, work to keep adding and adding and adding. Because it's just going to make everything too surface. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to get...
By the way, we've talked about for Glee. Glee is the perfect example of what, you know, like, they've gone through the struggles, for better or worse. Like, you can say Glee had its successes, Glee had its downfalls, and whatever else. But that's a perfect example of, okay, here's what they tried, here's how we can do it better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a knock on Glee. Obviously, they are huge pioneers with a lot of the stuff that they did.
You need to fall in love with more characters. In every movie, you should be falling in love with a different character or learning something new.
There you go.
I agree. I love this film so much. And Kay Cannon, she the writer, she did say they don't have anything made or written out for Pitch Perfect 3, but she's just waiting for the demand from people. Like, they have to want it, and obviously the numbers are there, and studio-wise, they can easily make another one, but they want the actual demand for the characters, for the story, for the love of this franchise, for them to come back.
I feel like part of her is lying. I feel like she has at least an outline. Because here's the thing, you could take the outline and make any other movie, just swap out the characters,
I'm
the relationship.
I'm sure she's daydreamed about it. Yeah. I'm sure there's an idea.
And this is what she says, and quote from Collider article, "If fans embrace it, we are going to seriously think about what the continuing journey would look like, but we don't know what that is yet. I don't know what the story of the third one is, so I can't say, but I'm excited to delve in and figure it out."
Cool.
So I'm excited. If there's another one, there should be. But I will definitely watch it, download the soundtrack to this, because I'm going to. And listen, keep watching the movie.
This is the part where you go into cups, and while doing it, you also tell everyone to subscribe and write comments.
That's right. You should do that. You should definitely write.
Where can we do that, Phil?
In English, perhaps. But you can go in any other language. On our YouTube channel, there's iTunes, there's SoundCloud. We have an email, info@popcorntalk.com. Imagine that. You can do that there. Subscribe. Tell a friend, hey,
It's the number one thing that you can do. Spread the love because, you know...
That was perfectly timed for Phil's speech.
It
just
was.
Just to let you know.
It was.
So good.
Yeah, and there you go. Where can they find you? Sarah is not on the internet except here on Popcorn Talk and AfterBuzz TV and mm-hmm. on select movies that you can check out on the interwebs.
Yep. You can follow me on Twitter.
Not those movies, you dirty.
No.
You dirty minds.
You can follow me on Twitter at SerafiniTV. Again, follow all of us on Twitter at Popcorn Talk and Movie Anatomy on Anatomy of a Movie. Check us out on iTunes, YouTube, download, rate, comment, subscribe. We will keep talking to you and dissecting more movies.
A lot to look forward to. Tomorrowland, Jurassic World, Ant-Man.
Summer has just begun.
We just did Mad Max. There's a lot.
I'm so excited.
Star Wars.
So many.
There you go. Sing us out of here.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.